Director Ron Howard's movie, The Da Vinci Code, based on Dan Brown's best-selling novel, premieres in movie theaters across the world this week. Since the novel's release in 2003, it has sold more than 15 million copies around the world, and the movie is expected to be just as popular. It is the tale of a secret conspiracy to cover up the real Jesus. The book claims that Jesus was really just a man, and Mary Magdalene was his wife and mother of his child, and their descendants live on to this day. Although the book reads like a pulp fiction thriller, author Dan Brown claims that most of the historical assertions in it are based on fact. And while historians have a good chuckle over his theories, millions of his readers believe them. For them, a good conspiracy theory is just impossible to resist. Though the Vatican has not officially weighed in on the Da Vinci Code, bishops' conferences far and wide have responded in public and on the web with their own comments and suggestions on how to interpret the story. A number of cardinals here in the Vatican have also spoken out separately about the book, saying it shows contempt for Christianity and ignorance of the Catholic Church. Some prelates made their comments in a new documentary, The Da Vinci Code, A Masterful Deception, rebutting Dan Brown's theories. The film, produced by the international TV church news agency Rome Reports, was presented at a press conference here in Rome on Tuesday and is being distributed worldwide. Jesuit Father Gerald O'Collins, a professor of Holy Scripture at the Pontifical Gregorian University, was consulted for the documentary, which includes Jewish and Muslim perspectives and rebuttals from leading Catholic journalists and historians. He told me more about the documentary.
Well, it's very well done. It's a very critical documentary. It introduces quite a range of people, not just clergy like myself and Cardinal Rinsey, but also lay women. There's a Muslim girl who's very strong in the interview as well. But then there's art critics, and then a very interesting psychologist too. He has powerful things to say about the harm a narrative can do on people growing up and the impact of the Da Vinci Code film on adolescents.
There are a lot of people who've been writing to us here at Vatican Radio saying, you know, why hasn't the Vatican come out and either condemned the Da Vinci Code or at least told people to go out and boycott it? We've been getting a little bit of different messages from various cardinals and people in the Vatican or in the Curia. What exactly is the Vatican's stance on this film?
There's no one view at the Vatican, that's clear. I mean, one archbishop wanted it boycotted and so on, but others are taking the view this is a great chance of education. I certainly share that point of view that, I mean, the film's deplorable. It's a mosaic of errors, and there clearly is a plea for a kind of divine feminine religion, and it's anti-Christian, it's anti-Jewish too, but it presents a wonderful occasion for education. So I've been getting great big audiences, and I rejoice in that. As a teacher, as an educator, the film has worked very well for people like myself.
I probably am going to be one of those people who's going to go see it because I'm just curious myself. What would you say to people like me before we go to this movie? What should we be thinking about?
Well, I think you might want to look at the Gospels, the Easter narratives, and see the real Mary Magdalene, because it's a terrible parody of her in that Da Vinci Code. I mean, I love Mary Magdalene very much, and because of my mother's prayers through her, I was born. My mother wanted a son who would be a priest and pray to Mary Magdalene and echo me. Here I came along. So I'm glad to be alive and be a priest. So I'd like the real Mary Magdalene to be respected, and I intend to go and see it because people I'm speaking to in England in June, they will have seen it, and gives me a chance of being accurate about the film, which probably dumbs down the book. I'm sure it does, but it seems to retain the same central message that, you know, Jesus married to Mary Magdalene, their descendants are around today. That, after all, is not new. I mean, people have held that before. There was a character called Donovan Joyce in the 1970s. He produced a book which really went nowhere called The Jesus File. Same kind of thing, secret document, conspiracy, Jesus married to Mary Magdalene. But this one by Dan Brown just seems to have hit the nerve.
You said that there was a Muslim girl who is in this documentary. What exactly does she have to say?
Well, she finds it very disrespectful, you know, that She's Muslim. She's studying here at the Gregorian University, and a very sharp person indeed. And she doesn't study here because she's worried about changing her religion, but she wants to know more about Christianity. And she finds the film just insulting. Christians from the beginning accepted Jesus as divine. One reads John's Gospel, "My Lord and my God," and you know, and Dan Brown comes along with the idea that Constantine changed Christian belief at the beginning of the 4th century, demanding that they call him the divine Son of God. Well, that's just nonsense. She objects to that disregard for truth and disrespect for the huge Christian community around the world.
Did the issue of the Islamic cartoons come up at all, and the fact that Muslims across the world were outraged by, yes, by those?
Well, there's a hint of this in one or two of the things that Cardinal Rinzai says, that, I mean, he points out, which is just obviously true, if a book like that had been written against the founder of another religion, he's clearly thinking of Islam, I mean, the uproar would have been enormous. And he thinks Christians, yes, we should forgive people, but he thinks we sit down under too much of this kind of thing. But I don't think the right reaction is boycott, condemnation, lawsuits, but rather using it for education.
Some people I've talked to suggest that, you know, there's something that goes even deeper here. The Christians, like you said, perhaps are not standing up enough for their faith.
Well, I think that's right. They some don't. I think we've become too tolerant, in a not very good sense of tolerance. But also, there's an abysmal ignorance around, and but as I said, educational people in education can, on an issue like the Gospels, can help people to see the real story, the origins of the Gospels. Dan Brown has 80 Gospels in circulation at the beginning of the 4th century, and Constantine picks four and imposes those ones, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. But if you read Irenaeus in the 2nd century and other writers in the 2nd century, our four Gospels are already officially recognized. So it's just historical junk from Dan Brown, but it gives us the chance to talk about how the New Testament was actually formed.
Where can people go if they are confused or they want to learn some more about the Gnostic Gospels? One just recently resurfaced, the Gospel of Judas. Where can people go and actually learn more about their own faith?
Well, there's a superb book by someone called Philip Jenkins. Philip Jenkins, who teaches at Penn State. It's a book called The Hidden Gospels. It's very witty, well-written, and really the point that comes through is that the Gnostic Gospels were junk then and they're junk now. They emerged at the end of the 2nd century, and St. Irenaeus hammered them, quotes bits of them. He was a tough critic but an honest one, and he has a little bit of material about the so-called Gospel of Judas. But these so-called Gnostic Gospels, they like to be called Gospels, but they're not Gospels. They don't have the literary form of a Gospel. I mean, a real Gospel's got the story of Jesus' ministry, his death and his resurrection. They don't have that kind of thing. The so-called Gospel of Judas has no resurrection, and I mean, it's just a fragment. And Judas's job is to allow the spirit of Jesus to escape. That's typically Gnostic. Their idea is that redemption means our spirit getting away to a better world. There's no resurrection of the body in Gnosticism. So the things about Gnosticism were just unacceptable then, unacceptable now, including their anti-feminism too. The so-called Gospel of Thomas, that ends by a saying about women needing to become men if they're to be saved. Well, the friends of the Gnostic Gospels don't like bringing those things up today, but that's part of the full story. Antibody, very often enough anti-feminine, and redemption is the spirit getting away to a better world.
A word of advice to parish priests.
My advice to parish priests would be to found or keep going study groups and to look at the Gospel, see the real story of Mary Magdalene at the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus, and also where the New Testament espouses faith in the divinity of Christ, and also to place this book, The Da Vinci Code. It fits into a whole series of books that have been written by some very good writers, some of them like D.H. Lawrence had one called The Man Who Died, or George Moore, Across the Bridge Careth, And every two or three years, one of these books comes out, and they plagiarize each other. Maybe a little bit of research in that area. Good old Albert Schweitzer, that great writer and organist of over 100 years ago, he had a marvelous statement about these books. He says they're reissued every year under a different name. And literally in the Da Vinci Code, there's only one new so-called fact, that the figure next to Jesus at the Last Supper in Leonardo's painting is Mary Magdalene, which is, from a point of view of Renaissance art, garbage. That's the way they represented the beloved disciple. It also shows that Dan Brown can't count, because Jesus held the Last Supper with 12 male disciples. If you count the figures, there's Jesus plus 12 others. And if that's Mary Magdalene, where's John the Apostle?
You mean in the Leonardo painting?
Yes, there's just 12 figures with Jesus. I mean, it's as simple as that. You don't need to be a great expert on Leonardo and Renaissance art and so on. I mean, that painting, it innovates, but it also follows a lot of the conventions. There's no chalice on the table. There are cups. That's typical of Renaissance art, like Ghirlandaio and the others. And to paint John as beardless and young and a bit unisex is typical of Renaissance art. That's the male disciple John the Apostle, often identified with a beloved disciple who's next to Jesus.
Jesuit Father Gerald O'Collins, a professor of Holy Scripture at the Pontifical Gregorian University. He was speaking there about the new documentary, The Da Vinci Code, A Masterful Deception.